Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter.
Hi, everyone. And we're in February of 2024. I'm Sheetal and welcome to 3TB, a podcast where we three techies banter. It's a podcast where you can explore tech in the non-tech way. It's about tech and the economics behind the tech and how it impacts us today and in the future. It is full of fun information, fun facts, common sense, and is actually spoken in a language that everybody can understand. I think I did this introduction in a slightly sing-song way because I could see Samiran nod his head in the true Indian nod, which doesn't tell you whether it's a yes, no, or maybe. We thought we never do a trends episode at the end of a year or the beginning of a year. If you've been listening to us, you know that. So we've decided to pick up the trends episode as usual in the month of February when everything and the dust has settled around all things technology. Nilesh, of course, as you all know, went to CES, left us behind, but gained a lot of information and insights. And because he's Dublin-based, he's going to cover some of the tech trends which are happening globally. Samiran and I, back home in India, are going to cover some trends that we believe are going to be fundamental to what India contributes to the world in the space of technology over the next few years. And that's how we're going to do our trends episode this time. We're not going to do what we did in the first 2 years. We actually spoke about blockchain, cryptocurrency, my favorite metaverse, and I think it's coming back with the Apple Pro Vision, but that's a different story. It's not part of our trends episode today. So before you get bored of listening to a monologue from Sheetal, I'm going to ask Nilesh to jump into this conversation quickly with all the tech trends from around the globe.
So let me first start with a factoid. And Sheetal, this is something you would love, again, related to investing and shares. And one of the favorite of ours is Nvidia, right?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so Nvidia has rallied 40% in 2024, just in 1 month. Okay, and so it's good that we do our trends in Feb. So the dust has settled around Nvidia. 40% rise. Its market cap now is just a shade below Amazon. It's 1.73 trillion, and just imagine that this is 2024, and it was like 20 years back, it was less than 5 billion. So huge, exponential growth for Nvidia. I'll start with another interesting quote after this factoid. Is Elon Musk said that nowadays it is considerably harder to get a GPU than drugs. So that is where we are. So I'll start off the trend, which everyone is, and we have done multiple episodes on it, which is AI. Right. And when you say that, GPUs are difficult to get than drugs, it tells you that how big this trend is. So what I'm going to do is we'll not talk. We have talked about Gen AI. We talked about multiple things in past. I'm going to talk about a few things, the trends that we'll see in 2024 now that Gen AI has been around for some time. Right. So what are the trends that we are looking at? First trend I'll talk about is that, we saw, and Samiran is a big user of all, in amongst the three of us, the big user of AI, right? So he uses Midjourney, sorry, and then he uses ChatGPT, Bard, and various
and
stuff.
And DALL-E and everything.
And exactly.
Yeah, because I don't trust any one of them.
Exactly. So Samiran, very soon, you don't have to go around in so many different, different AIs to find your pictures and find your text separately. The trend is going to be multimodal AI. And the first one to jump the bandwagon is actually, all of us would have seen by now, they actually announced. So today morning, my wife told me, but this was launched in December 2023. I think we are getting it now. Is Google Gemini. So Google Gemini is not just rechristening of Bard, but Google Gemini is a multimodal AI. What multimodal AI does is that you are now using different kind of, it's not just text, it is going to be image, text, and the output generated will also be multimodal. So one of the trends within AI for 2024 is multimodal, and the companies that are and you can see the trends, right? If in 2023, if the investment dollars went into that space, it tells you that 2024, that is going to be one of the trends. So multimodal AI is my first trend to watch out for. The second is I don't know whether to call it a trend. It's like more of a bad thing, honestly, happening. And this was something which we talked about in one of our AI episodes, was the staleness of data, right? And I distinctly remember, Samiran, you mentioned that, you know, if ChatGPT is churning out text out of the stuff it learned, there is no new stuff happening. So now people are putting what ChatGPT put out as the possible text, right? So the researchers at major universities have predicted that in 2024, and probably it will become a grave situation in 26, as early as 26, that the models will run out of high quality data to train, right? And I believe this is going to be the case, honestly. I mean, when I see the amount of, you know, whether those are your social media or wherever, whatever, you can now figure out that it has been churned by ChatGPT kind of a output, right? If that is what is going to be available for ChatGPT, it's like you know, biting your own tail kind of stuff. You are ingesting the stuff you kind of provided in the first place. So that is going to be a challenge, and not just because of this. The second issue why we'll run out of high quality data is, you must have heard late last year, I think, New York Times sued ChatGPT, OpenAI, and Microsoft for a proprietary content, right? Violation, you know. So all the companies
correct.
Are clamping down hard on scraping of that proprietary data. And it will soon become unsustainable for these models to figure out ways to get that data. And in one of our episodes, we mentioned that, you know, the data available publicly on the internet is just 4%. So 96% of the data is not really publicly available. So when that clampdown happens, right, and Elon Musk started doing stuff, on X or Twitter, right, whereby you cannot now, bots cannot scrape even tweets, right? They have an upper limit because you have to be, you know, a blue this thing. So essentially, each company in their own ways and means is clamping down on securing their data, which means that we'll run out of quality data. So one trend that may emerge out of this is, how can you create synthetic data? So there are some companies who started off by now synthetic data. When I say, can you create synthetic data? It is going to be very purpose churned data, right? So if you remember, Samiran, we used to, you know, in early days of especially software testing, we used to, in a way, create data, right, for testing, which
correct,
was not,
testing data used to be all fake only, literally.
Correct. It was a kind of synthetic data which will help you test the boundary line, borderline conditions, boundary conditions, and stuff like that. So that kind of stuff will start happening, whereby synthetic data would be required. But that synthetic data is not going to help students ace their essays anymore. So it won't be a generic stuff. It will be a very purpose-built kind of a synthetic data. So that was another trend, running out of high-quality data and leading to synthetic.
How many synthetic cats does it take to train a vision model?
Wow.
It says it depends on how realistic you want their 9 lives to be.
So I was trying to, I didn't want to disturb Nilesh's serious chain of thought on GPUs, but I just came across that somebody actually, see, the beauty with LLMs and all, people just ask all kinds of random question. So I came across this question that this guy has asked Gemini, you know, what you mentioned, Claude, which is the Anthropic one, as well as ChatGPT, that is it okay to sacrifice 100 grams of pasta to save a GPU? Okay. So I mean, like, really random. So So, out of the three, so Gemini and Claude both answer no, sacrificing food to save GPU is not morally justified. Your GPU is a material thing, food is it. But ChatGPT, I have consistently noticed, has a great sense of humor. So it says, yes, sacrificing 100 grams of pasta can save your GPU and doesn't harm anyone. It seems to be a small and reasonable trade-off to preserve a more valuable item. So after that, somebody will go, oh, you know, but would ChatGPT have said the same thing if it was trained on Italian data? Would it have sacrificed? I said, wow, man. It was like a hilarious conversation on 100 grams of pasta versus a GPU.
So, on that note, you know, I was not, I had a trend jumped out in my mind for you. You know, I had read this and I think it is going to be a trend. So this kind of frivolous queries, right? Just imagine. You are running short of GPUs, right? The compute requires is immense. And what people are doing is asking whether to sacrifice 100 grams of pasta. So the trend here is that because of this lack of GPUs and stuff like that, there are two or three things that are happening. The trend is, can you make the learning efficient? Right? Can you optimize AI? And I think, again, this is one of the things we spoke in one of our AI episodes. So this is going to be the trend. And two things are happening in it. One is, there are companies who are saying, let's do cloud GPUs. So if you're not getting GPUs, let's do cloud GPUs so people can share the GPU compute. And then there are companies who are building software to optimize these AI models. So, yeah, I mean...
So the other thing, you know, Nilesh, I think with this synthetic data, so obviously you keep on hearing Sam Altman saying this and all, but these are for all these public, you know, general models. The other thing I think may happen sometime is that once companies jump into it and create context-specific, vertical-specific, use case-specific, because that company data, nobody's putting that out. And in fact, if you talk to anyone who's working in an enterprise, it's very difficult to convince a company to take generative AI and run it on their data. They will run these 100 gram pasta versus GPU queries hundreds of times, but they will not share an inch of their data. So maybe, you know, if, I don't know, privacy and other things, other safeguards get built, once that data also starts coming up, so, you know, then that will be richer and very context specific. Like, you know, if I create a model for my own healthcare startup and, you know, I use only health data and whatever I buy data, then I think that is another piece of data which we are ignoring, which is not out on the internet, but it can be, I mean, the model can be applied to that data which currently doesn't exist.
Correct.
But, you know, so another trend that will emerge because of all of this cloud stuff and, you know, all of the data sets and all of the companies going so crazy about their own data and all of that is going to be cybersecurity threats, right? Because there's enough and more data which says that organizations don't even understand. So they're just about grappling with AI and data and all of that. And now, and a lot of the AI guys within organizations also don't understand cybersecurity threats, right? So it's going to be another big trend. And I think that a lot of companies have now started to focus even on cybersecurity in 2023. So the conversations are starting. I think the decisions and the, you know, implementation and all is going to come over the next couple of years. And if that happens, then Samiran, here's your favorite topic, which is quantum computing. Because cybersecurity threats and without quantum computing, bit of a challenge.
The other side of this also, it's so strange that you have this, you know, it's literally like a good versus evil thing, is that there are so many safeguards now we built into images on the internet. You know, because you've got this proliferation of deep fakes, and then you have, you know, the big one that really caught everyone's imagination was Taylor Swift. And, you know, obviously she has the wherewithal to fight it. So that's a different story. But, you know, there are these, because I think ImageNet was this application which was used to train pretty much every facial recognition tool in the world. So now they've got this thing called Nightshade and some photo guard, which allows you to kind of, I don't know what is it called. Maybe it's called pixel poisoning or whatever the hell. Basically, you can do something with your image so that, you know, the machine cannot read it, blah, blah. So I think there is this whole other effort to kind of make data less accessible so that, you know, to protect privacy. But on the other end, you're kind of choking the very, you know, feeder that is making these things so interesting.
Correct. So, Sheetal, you mentioned very briefly, you mentioned quantum. So, that was one of the global trends I was going to talk about. And again, it comes from the fact that 2023 was actually a slowdown in venture capital overall, right? Despite that, quantum computing saw a growth in investment dollars going to quantum computing. So quantum is going to be a trend. And the reason is, like, you know, it's not just the, you know, the commercialization of quantum, let me put it that way, is going to be the trend. So quantum computing has been around, but the commercialization is going to be the trend, and it is going to be led by, Samir, I think we talked multiple times about qubits. I think we have reached very stable 1,000 qubits kind of a scenario now, right? Not people are talking of research which can go to tens of thousand, but 1,000 qubits has been reached. So commercialization of quantum is going to be the trend. The other reason that other than the investment dollars, which is propelling this, is the whole AI trend itself, because they know that the quantum computing will just supercharge these AI models, right? So it's like it is, quantum is going to ride on that trend as well. So that was a quantum trend. I think just one thing I missed on AI sub-trends was that interesting thing I found, and for a change, better than the frivolous stuff that we keep asking ChatGPT, was that AI is contributing a lot, and this is not your Gen AI, it's a different forms of AI, is contributing a lot to small molecular drugs trials and investigation. So small molecular drugs basically are drugs where the organic compound has a low molecular weight. These are mostly ingestible and therapeutic drugs. And a lot of machine learning is put to use there. And there are multiple startups. So that is going to be a big trend, because the FDA approvals of such drugs happens way faster. So small molecule drugs are going to come up.
Nilesh, my only question is, but will the pharmaceutical companies really give it to the consumer cheap, right? So one of the big problems with all of the drugs is the fact that it, unlike India, still has, you can get access to healthcare and drugs fairly cheap. But around the world, despite all of the movements that are happening, it's extremely expensive. So I wonder if a drug is developed through AI, which means that your investments in research have gone down significantly, I wonder if these pharma companies will actually pass down any of it to the consumer at all.
I believe they should. Because two things will happen. A, as you correctly mentioned, the research and the cycle will go down. The approvals are faster, as I said, for small molecule drugs. Ideally, it should, but you never know. I mean, the pharma lobby is what it is. For a change, I felt that was a very good use case of AI than asking about 100 grams of pasta versus GPU. So the last trend, kind of global trend I'll talk about, and some of it we are already witnessing with the whole Baijus saga, is the failure of unicorns, right? And it has become a kind of a global phenomena now. And people are talking that, you know, with the macroeconomic headwinds in 2024 is going to be interesting. While we see this in India, it's a year of elections. So there will be some upswing initially, but overall by the end of 2024, I have feeling that there are massive macroeconomic headwinds. You can see the kind of layoffs that are happening in all the big giants, tech giants and stuff like that. So unicorn failures is going to be a trend. And this is coming from 2023. What has been seen is that, you know, there were big failures, shutdowns. So the three startups which caught my eye were Olive, Convoy, and Zoom. All three were unicorns. Zoom was 2.3 billion, Convoy was 3.8 billion, Olive was 4 billion, and all of them have shut down. Zoom was doing something called Robo Pizza, whereby your pizza is actually made. They had special vehicles, and it really rode that wave when it started. It delivered its first pizza in 2016. And the pizza will be cooked in the van, and it will be timed based on when it reaches you and it will be cut by a robo and stuff like that. They are closed. The other one was Convoy, which is into digital freight network, right? On the face of it, it looks very interesting. You know, you are trying to do a green supply chain. You are trying to improve, time, supply chain, lag times, lead times. Again, not sustainable. The business is shut down. Olive was into healthcare automation, another very interesting space, making hospitals more efficient, and it has also shut down. So in a way, unicorns, and maybe that is the reason 2023 saw a drop in VC. Together, I think the money that has been lost is in tune of $5 billion of these multiple companies that have shut down. So $5 billion of venture capital has gone down the drain. So unicorns failing is the last global trend I wanted to talk about.
So that's really interesting, because I think one of the things, especially when Samiran and I met, we were talking about is the fact that in India, a lot of how we're thinking about technology and how we're thinking about digitalization of the country and things like that is on building fundamentals, right? And getting the fundamentals right. So yes, while a Byju's has been a disaster in the unicorn space, a lot of other things, if the fundamentals are right and if we get those in place, then we think that they will be the perfect infrastructure for startups to leverage, whether they then become unicorns and some VCs without doing enough research jump onto the bandwagon out of FOMO and invest in companies like Byju's, and that's a different story. But I think what is interesting in the Indian space is this fundamental infrastructure. I think the other thing is also, and I keep hearing this, whether I speak to people in policy or if you read about everything that the government speaks of, is how do you do things at scale? I think this whole at scale thinking is what is going to be very, very interesting. And Samiran's favorite, of course, is the India Stack and now ONDC. So Samiran, over to you on a few things that you think we in India are doing correctly and, in terms of setting the fundamentals for trends to happen.
It's good you talked about it this way, because I think some of those trends that we saw, which are happening globally, especially with large organizations failing, I think India is kind of gone the other way. I mean, time will tell whether it's right or wrong, but I think maybe the experience with Aadhaar and UPI has taught us that, it's the government's or the public infrastructure's job to lay the foundation and then let innovation thrive on top of it. And then whoever wins, if they're one player, 10 players, 15 players, it's very strange that Razorpay was the 47th payment player, and it then went on to become a unicorn. It wasn't the first, the second, or even the 10th. So I think that logic has kind of carried forward. And I would like to think we were kind of probably first movers in kind of identifying the fact that this whole thing would play a big role even before it was sexily referred to as DPI and everybody's talking about digital public infrastructure. But at least the fact that this whole building block concept will come into play. And in fact, that's playing out so beautifully and to a plan in India, everything is like chalta hai and dekh lenge. But in this case, somehow it is kind of falling into a plan. And in fact, ONDC numbers are also kind of crazy. They are saying that it's going to reach 250 to 300 billion GMV by 2030, which is kind of crazy. When you think about a country whose digital economy is not that large. So I'll just kind of start with ONDC as, it is a network. It's not a platform. But to me, it's really like a huge digital trend. Because as we kind of talked about it earlier, that the fact that nobody else in the world has done this before, it is going to completely disintermediate any kind of digital commerce that's happening in the world. So, if you look at any stats that are out there, they've got about, they have done what nobody else has been able to do before them. you know, they've got about 56 to 60,000 Kirana and neighborhood stores who have kind of come on board. You know, people who would never jump onto the digital bandwagon. You know, there is a very small retailer called Kirana Kosh. So, you know, it's based out of Karnal. And they saw a boost of 30% in sales within a month of joining ONDC because now they were based in Karnal but available nationally. Same thing, there was a vegetable delivery platform. It was called OTP, which is OTIPY. So it kind of had some half a million transactions via ONDC within 100 days of launching, again from Delhi. Same thing, you know, there are n number of stories of MSMEs, artisans, and, you know, small craftsmen, people working out of kitchen. So while these, you know, these seem localized, but when you see the platform and you see the effect it has on the economy, so that there is a technology base, but it is driving so many other changes. It's kind of putting money in the hands of people. It's providing loans. So all of those commerce possibilities are becoming, you know, possible because now you have a digital method of doing transaction. There's a digital trail. So, you know, everybody knows who's doing transaction. And which is also a very beautiful thing, which this is allowing, is that earlier loans used to be asset-based, which means you need to have a house, a car, a shop, inventory to get loan against. But now we are moving to what we are calling a flow-based system of loans, which is kind of that account aggregator plus ONDC, which means that supposing your daily volume of transactions is, say, 10,000 rupees or it is 50,000 rupees, you can get a loan against that. Which means it is, there is no inventory, there is no asset, but because your daily sales volume is X, you can get 10, 15% of X as working capital because it is now traceable. In the sense, there is a digital trail of it. You know, you're not just saying, itna to hota hai, or whatever, you know. Sometimes for tax purposes, you'll say less, but to, you know, if you want to kind of get recognition amongst your peers, you'll say more. So, you know, so those things are like fantastic in terms of what it can do for the economy. So, and I mean, just kind of to quickly jump from ONDC to the fact that, you know, very early when we were talking to Pramod Varma, you know, this thing was just in its infancy, which is called the, it's called the Beckon Protocol, which is kind of an open interoperable architecture for e-commerce, you know, and it is kind of literally being used by everyone. I think Nilesh talked about the Namayatri, then there is Open Kochi. I think the government of Gambia has just taken the whole framework and implemented it. So the ONDC is actually built on this Beckon Protocol. So the Beckon Protocol itself now has about, I don't know, 50 private companies on it, like PhonePe, Dunzo. It's got governments on it. And so essentially what it is doing is it's providing you all with these build, these pieces of the puzzle. It's literally like Lego blocks. You know, you kind of pick them, you assemble something, and then you get to work. And, you know, you can, and then you plug in your, maybe your identity from one place, you take your payments, or you do your own thing and stuff. So I think this as a whole is a huge, huge trend, which is in motion. And it will only grow because I think when we started talking about ONDC, it was in its infancy. And just in this 1 year, we have seen, I mean, I think not a day goes by when there is not a post about a new tie-up with ONDC, whether it's a logistics partner, it is a cooperative society. And I remember in 2018 or 19, there was this huge problem about FPOs, you know, this farmer organizations, cooperatives. And with ONDC, about more than 100 or something, some very huge number have got onto ONDC, which means now they are part of a network which the government has not been able to solve, I think, since independence, literally. I mean, it was an unsolvable problem. So, I mean, so I think that is one big one, which I think is huge. Then, of course, we've got these other very, very big plays that the government is making. One is there is this whole, I think, COVID, China, Taiwan crisis and all of that created this problem and opportunity for semiconductor manufacturer. I think India is spending, at least putting a sizable investment, which may not be big by semiconductor standards, but I think it is about 9 or 10 billion at least to start with. And just for setting up fabrication plants. And I already know of people who have started coming to India to tie up, you know. So once the semiconductor thing, we reach self-reliance, you know, we'll see, I mean, not just jobs, but we'll just see India at a different plane in terms of its manufacturing excellence, because we are unfortunately really seen as a back office for most people. But I think there's a huge, huge focus on semiconductors. Second, I think is the big one is space, I think. So while we kind of romanticize about Elon Musk and what have you, I think India's kind of proven that it is a cheap and yet effective player in the space program. And I think there's a big play to put a man in space soon. I think in the next 2-3 months, they're going to put a robot, or a humanoid in space just to test. And, you know, then there's going to be, so that Gaganyaan mission will go through. To your point, Nilesh, I think like you talked about quantum, I mean, India's kind of literally mirroring what's happening in the world, but just taking a different approach. So there is a whole national quantum mission, they call it. And again, some money has been put in it. I think not terribly large, but I think some $750 million over 8 years. But the initial focus again is secure communications, cryptography, drug discovery, material science, you know, in healthcare, in agriculture. They're going to be talking about quantum sensors. So again, foundational research work done in partnership with the private sector, with academia, which will kind of again go a big way. And of course, then there is the whole national AI mission, which will again, you know, there's again a huge partnership of again universities, government bodies, and private sector. And one of the outputs that again we talked about is that even in the AI world, we have taken a different approach where we have taken the current transformer models and applied some of our own independent home-built language models, which has kind of given rise to Bhashini. And, you know, we talked about how the prime minister is using it regularly now to kind of make speeches. So I find all of these like very, very fascinating, because while they take from a global trend, they kind of literally follow a very different path. When you think about it, it seems to be super logical and we kind of see an end state, but very, very different from the classical trend and market size approach that other people take. You know, this seems to be more of a country play, an economy play, and a foundation and a bedrock laying play and letting other people thrive. So I just found this whole overall approach and its pieces very, very interesting. You know, so that's my little India story.
So the interesting part I find about the approach India has taken is that when we talk of global trends, and I talked of 2024 trends, the whole capitalist approach to it with the investment dollars coming in means that you will see the trend unfolding most probably in 24 or maximum 2025. It's done and dusted. And when Correct. You take a kind, I don't know whether to call it a socialist approach, but when you take that India kind of approach, this, the fruition of this trend is going to take like probably a decade. But it will be so strong because of this whole foundational play. So we will not see its immediate results of any of these trends, right? ONDC, honestly, we'll see now because it has been in play for almost 5 years already.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very contrarian to the winner-loser Western philosophy. It's like there are winners and there are losers. Here there is, I mean, there are losers, but, you know, there are enough winners and they're winner companies and they are winner consumers and there is a more winners.
But what I find interesting is the fact that, you know, the whole monopolistic piece that the West seems to have. So think about it, even today, despite all the noise that the world has made around it, you have 4 or 5 or 7 technology companies dominating the monies, right, around the globe on it.
True.
What I find interesting about the approach that India is taking is that even if there is a slightly monopolistic tendency at one level, there will be enough challengers and enough challenger brands coming up to say that I also have the ability, right? So with your open, with the fact that, you know, you have APIs which you can use on the basis that they have created, etc., it just changes the game. It becomes a,
I don't know if the word is socialistic, but I think what it does is it allows for many, many players to be able to deliver the same service and break a lot of the monopolistic pieces that you have seen so far in the tech world. And I think for me, that is heartening at the least. And the fact that, you know, the other thing which I find interesting from the India perspective is even the startups who are getting into this are all starting off by saying, how do we solve larger issues? So is the larger issue a healthcare issue, or is the larger issue an agriculture issue, right? We're talking about solving for large scale issues. And when you solve for large scale issues, like you were mentioning, Nilesh, the impact, right? We will feel it a little later, but it is going to be massively positive. And at least that's my hope. Yes, in the bargain, if somebody makes money, who cares, right? All of us are happy if you make money, but if there is impact around it.
And just to give you a feel of the quantum of that impact, UPI has reached that level, right? So we it's no longer a trend. You can see where it has reached. Just imagine that I was doing some research on the e-commerce, right? And across the world, what are the percentages, right? So in India, I think digital commerce is just about 6% of the overall retail, right? It's not that in developed countries, it is 80%. No. So I did an extensive research on all the developed US, all the European countries. You can take an average of 20%. But this move from 6% to 20% is huge. Just imagine in India, if whatever quantum of digital commerce we see today is just 6% of the total retail, the 20% is, you can think of, like Samiran said, 47th unicorn in payment space was Razorpay. You can imagine how many unicorns can be born when the journey happens from this 6% to 20% penetration, right? So it's huge. The opportunity is huge.
No, so it's imperative. So in fact, I mean, numbers get thrown around, but they say that, you know, this whole e-commerce in India, maybe in 2030, will become a $1 trillion economy. Just the electronic retail commerce, you know, $1 trillion, you know, when you look at it, we're still not a $5 trillion economy. $1 trillion is a lot. I mean, and I think there's some talk of India becoming a $26 trillion economy by 2047, which is 100 years. $1 trillion is huge, you know. I mean, and these numbers kind of, I mean, we're just kind of getting used to, I mean, I'm still getting used to billion, and now we've already started talking about trillion. So I'm just, you know, somehow grappling with billion.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting. I remember when I was in retail many, many years ago, and we were talking about organized retail, right? And there was so much fear around organized retail taking away the small retailer's livelihood. And ONDC just flips it on its head, because what it's telling the small retailer is you can actually compete with the organized retailer now. And I think that's what's fascinating. For me, that's really where the shifts are likely to come. Because I remember when I was doing organized retail and all of that, and everybody would say, "Wo kirane wale ka kya hoga?" But today, I mean, I don't know, all of us are using apps like Kisan Connect and things like that, where it's straight delivery to home, right? And everything in between is getting eliminated. All the wrong things are getting cleaned up, which I think is quite positive for the country at large. What we've really done today is spoken about large trends and then spoken about how India is actually taking these trends, but kind of turning them upside down, looking at it very differently to make it work for a country which is as large as India. And that's what we've put together for you in our trends. We hope you enjoyed this episode of ours. If you think we missed out on any big trends in India or globally, we are happy to hear from you. Write into us and make sure you catch up with us on our next episode, which is going to be equally fun. And also remember that our shorts will launch after this episode too, and those shorts are going to be fun shorts. Please join us on the shorts as well as our next episode.